Hey, it's Don Coscarelli, filmmaker. I just wrote a book. Check it out. It's called Fiction, Tales from the World of Phantasm. And it can teach you all the things that you never knew about the Phantasm film series. A lot of interesting stuff. Horror, violence, not much sex. Check it out. Now available on Amazon, paperback, and Kindle.
This is The Gala Show. I'm your reporter on the beat, Gala Avery. On this episode, you may know my guest as a jack of all trades. He's the writer, producer, director, and composer of titles such as Necropolis Legion, Queen of Blood, and Parasite Lady. Maybe you know him as the author of Corman / Poe, a collection of conversations with Roger Corman that explore the making of Corman's Edgar Allan Poe films. Or even you might know him as the man that helps run the circus that is Full Moon Features. Well, here on The Gala Show, I know him as the black glove killer with a very cool hat who loves the Video Archives podcast.
I do. I'm having a moment right now.
Chris Alexander.
Thank you. I can't even live up to that introduction. But I'm having this great moment right now because you're in front of this microphone, in front of me, looking at me, looking down. But your beat, your diatribe, the things you're saying, are what I listen to, and I'm actually watching it happen in real time. I'm having this out-of-body surreal experience.
I'm in your head.
Yeah, so now I'm seeing like life imitating art, I don't know, it's all palindromic, so yes. Well, thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. If you didn't catch that, this is Chris Alexander here on The Gala Show.
Yes, I'm a bit loquacious. I talk a lot, so.
It's okay, well, we're good.
Reel me in.
Well, before we begin the topic for today, I have a question for you.
Sure.
So, I actually did not know before today, not before this room, but before today, that you were the former editor-in-chief.
Sure, yeah. I was the third editor in history to run that. I ran it for 6 years.
That was crazy. Yeah. And then what, I knew that you were a father, but I didn't know that you were raising your three sons while editing Fangoria.
Absolutely.
How did you juggle that?
Well, I mean, you know, I guess at the tail end of it, I'm a single father. I wasn't at the time. So, I mean, it was phasing out. But, you know, I decided when I got the gig, they said, come move to New York. I live in Toronto, Canada. Mm-hmm. I'm Canadian. Like you are, kind of.
Yeah, no, my dad's born Flin Flon, and so I have the essence of Canada. It's funny, my brother's also Canadian,
right,
but he's never been.
Oh, okay. Well, you should come on up, man. I got a whole house full of pinball machines and amazing stuff. We'll come over. I was in with all these children, and they said, come to New York. I said, I don't want to come to New York. I want to stay here, you know, free healthcare and all this fun stuff. And you know, I could, as long as I get a Wi-Fi signal, I can run this thing from Mars. So I stayed in Toronto, and I ran Fangoria the entire time from my home office, only going to New York when I needed to, traveling when I needed. And I proved that I could, and I did. I not only ran Fangoria, but I brought back Gorezone. I locked the deal with the band Kiss to do the official Kiss magazine, all running out of Fangoria. So I did like 200 magazines during that run. It was crazy.
From Toronto.
Yeah, with my kids, like literally rocking them. Barbara Steele would call the house, darling. My kids would pick up the phone, Dad, it's Barbara. And then Nicolas Cage would call the house, oh, is your dad home? And he's like, Dad, it's some guy named Nick. And that was my life. I'll never forget Mila Jovovich on the phone to her doing this interview. I guess it was Resident Evil part whatever. And she's got her kid in her arm. I got my kid in my arm. We're trying to conduct this interview. And eventually I had to call it. I'm like, Mila, I can't do this anymore. She's like, the interview has never, ever aborted an interview with me before. This is a first. But that was my life. I did it well. But then in retrospect, did I? I don't know. It was all this wild blur. But you know what? I think I did the right thing because my kids have had a front row seat to this madness their entire life. Like, they have done things that most kids of their vintage would never
Do they hope to join the circus?
My oldest, definitely. He's super into, you know, Roger Corman's his idol. He's a voracious reader, a cinema geek. He listens
16.
To your podcast.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, no, he's the guy. He loves heavy metal and rock and roll, and he's the guy. You know, they're all into it to some degree, but you know, when sometimes it's like what dad does. It's just what dad does. They live in this crazy house. I mean, that's just life to them, right?
Well, that was like me with Pulp Fiction, honestly.
Right.
Pulp Fiction was just always like this thing that my dad just did.
Sure.
And everyone around me was like, it's this huge thing. And I was like, well, I didn't see it until I was 18.
Right. Oh, really?
Yeah,
you didn't see it until you were 18?
My dad held off. He was like...
Now, was it your dad or was it your mom pulling
the reins?
It was
my dad.
Oh, yeah.
My dad is very... like, for example, like Mr. Stitch, which he hates showing anyone.
Right.
We started playing it. He actually turned it off. Oh. And I didn't see Killing Zoe until I was maybe like, God, we were making Lucky Day when I saw Killing Zoe.
What?
And Rules of Attraction for the first time. I was 15 for Rules of Attraction.
Okay, but you're you know, a human being of, in this era that has your fingers
access.
You have access to everything. Oh. What did you really just?
I have respect for my father's wishes.
You had respected for, wow, that is your dad.
My dad told me not to do it.
Your parents
so
did
I didn't.
A good job then. That's fantastic. Wow.
But it took that long.
My kids have no respect for me. No, that's not true at all. They have absolute respect for me. I think. I
but
hope.
They also have respect for art. So maybe they're
they
seeking
do
it out.
Have respect for art. But also, I've been pretty like, you know, when they were really little and I'd show them Raiders of the Lost Ark and the heads would explode. I'd always explain to them what this is. I'd show them the making of stuff so they could see the wax heads and everything
Understand.
Else. So I would always show them the wizard behind the curtain so that they were always, I was hoping that they'd always be clear what is real, what is fantasy, what is illusion. And I would never show them anything that had any kind of like, you know, sexual violence or anything like that mm-hmm. that was above them. But certainly, I mean, to me, it was always ridiculous. On Halloween, you throw blood and guts on your kid and skeletons and you're freaking the hell out of everybody. And then suddenly on November 1st, it's all over. Now we can't show our kids this stuff because it's going to turn them into serial killers. It's like, what? I was always at odds with that. So to me, it's always like, if they're interested in this stuff, I'm going to take them into, you know, behind the curtain and show them what's what.
I think that's great.
Yeah. So normalize it, you know?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, as always, my guest gets to bring their topic to the microphone. Chris, why don't you tell us what your topic is and why you decided to choose it?
You know, this is so hard for me because both of us love movies so much. Like it's,
and we
it
had
is
like
literally,
six topics in
I don't
email.
Drink really. I don't, never done drugs. I've just been a slave to cinema. I mean, it is true. And especially stranger cinema, dark cinema, horror stuff. So I could talk about anything, but I did mention to you, cause I know your dad, he's a big fan of Dawn of the Dead.
Yes, he really is. Yeah. He loves that whole entire trilogy, but specifically...
Trilogy? It's funny you say that.
Well,
okay, you stop it at Day of the Dead then?
I mean, I think we're going to put 30 minutes on the clock, and I think we're going to start talking about Dawn of the Dead
yeah.
and my trilogy.
Oh,
I
yeah, yeah. No, that's fair
it.
Enough.
Well,
that's
go.
The Rubenstein Laurel trilogy yeah. of Dawn of the Dead, yeah. And now it's time for a commercial break.
I might be vegetarian, but that doesn't mean I can't enjoy a good spice rub. My favorite place to get them is Smoked Bros, a veteran-owned and operated business that sells premium handcrafted dry rubs, spice blends, and seasonings. Psst, guys, you can even put it on your popcorn. My favorites are Honey Badger, because he doesn't give a bleep, and jelly and peanut flavor topping, because some things just taste better together. The website even has recipes, so go check out smokedbros.com to support a veteran-owned and operated business and fill your cabinet with delicious flavor.
And we're back.
Okay.
Or the Living Dead movies.
I mean, yeah. I would consider it a trilogy partially because my dad just showed me the first three and then that was it. And so maybe it's because I don't know if my dad would say it was a trilogy though, because I think he would also like, I mean, doesn't Dan O'Bannon have a movie that kind of
Well, he has Return of the Living Dead, which has nothing to do with the series. It started off as based on a book by John Russo, who had co-wrote Night of the Living Dead.
Mm-hmm.
But if you read the book Night of the Living Dead, it's not the movie.
Yeah.
It was originally supposed to be directed by Tobe Hooper in 3D, and it went through a lot of hands, and it actually opened up against Romero's Day of the Dead. And that's why Day of the Dead bombed, is that everybody got a lot of people got confused.
Wow.
Plus, Return of the Living Dead, if you've seen it, it's like a punk rock.
I actually haven't seen
it. Oh, my God. We'll stop recording right now. Watch it. It's a masterpiece. It's amazing. It's like Jaws. It's a perfect movie. You get sucked in every time. There's not a false moment in that picture. It's just maniacal.
Wow, you use the term perfect movie.
Yeah.
How many other movies would you attribute that word to?
You know, it's perfect. It's so subjective, obviously.
Oh, I mean,
but,
I agree.
But you know, movies that you can keep, sometimes they're imperfect, but they have a certain kind of... It's almost like putting on a song that you love and you can listen to, you know, Pink Floyd's Comfortably Numb or Stairway to Heaven over and over ad nauseum because it just hits the right notes. It follows the pathways in your brain where it's perfect. Jaws is one of them. I mean, I watched Jaws a billion times and I always forget that Quint is going to die. You know what I mean? Because you're so sucked up in the narrative. And as in so many movies, I mean, of course I'm drawing a blank, but there are so many perfect quote-unquote movies where you get sucked into the drama Yeah. And Return of the Living Dead is like that.
I mean, I like the idea, though, that it's something that you can do ad nauseum because you can just watch it over and over and over and find something about yourself that's different each and every time that you watch it. I mean, like, for me, like, Bugsy Malone is definitely, it's like my favorite movie of all
Paul
time.
Paul Williams. I know we're both Paul Williams freaks.
But yeah, we are. But that's my favorite movie of all time. And so much so that I listen to it in the car on my Spotify. Bugsy Malone. I have a playlist. Yeah. Exactly. And I have the record, and I'll sit in the dark with my fireplace on, and I'll just listen to the record.
I was really
I started crying the other night listening to it.
When I was really little, my grandmother had the paperback of Bugsy Malone.
Really?
Which had that insert in the middle that had like four or five pages of black and white photographs. So I couldn't read the book, but I could look at the photos, and I was so fucking confused. Because I thought it was gangsters, but they're throwing pies at each other. Like, what is happening? And they're children. But I was obsessed with looking at those photos.
Yeah.
I didn't see Bugsy Malone until many years
ago. Yeah, the Japanese vinyl has this fantastic story from Paul Williams, basically. Like, and I think it's from Alan Parker about Paul Williams. Yeah. But just about how they came together and how they made it. And how Bugsy Malone, he's torn between Ireland and Italy.
Right.
And so he's like the child of both. And that's why he doesn't fit in anywhere.
Yeah.
So he's kind of being pulled.
Alan Parker, another perfect movie. Angel Heart, if you've ever seen that with Mickey Rourke and Robert De Niro.
I need to see, like, that's the thing. It's like, I love Alan Parker so much with Bugsy Malone. I'm almost afraid to watch, like, Pink Floyd the Wall.
Floyd the Wall, you know, if you're going to watch Pink Floyd the Wall, double it with Evita.
Okay.
Because that's him and his music. And actually, people like, you know, Evita sucks. It does not suck. It's a masterpiece. But it's basically Pink Floyd the Wall. Just grafted on with Andrew Lloyd Webber. I mean, it's the same style. He's got the same style. If you watch if you watch Angela's Ashes, anything, there's a certain Parker. He's passed recently, didn't he? He's no longer with us.
I think he did.
I always get him and Neil Jordan crossed because they're both of that British directors.
To be honest, I don't know.
He did. I'm pretty sure he did.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. It sucks. But anyways, long story short, Angel Heart, you must watch this film. Okay. But watch it late at night and watch it alone. No distractions.
Yeah, that's so funny because there are certain movies that you have to watch alone. Like when I saw Winter Kills.
Right.
I watched it the first time by myself, and then I watched it the second time with my dad because I did it for the Pearson on Podcast calendar episode. Mm. And then I went to the Bev to go watch it with the crowd, and I was like, why did I do this? I love watching movies with crowds, but that movie was so much better just by myself.
You know, and I fell in love with this stuff, and Dawn of the Dead's one of them. I guess we better circle back on that. But are you watching these movies when you're a certain age and you're impressionable and you don't know a lot about the world, really? And you're just loving these images that are so, you know, diametrically opposed to the natural world that you're used to. And you see them late at night. Like when I was little, before VHS even, I would get the TV guide in and I would circle anything that was horror or anything that sounded cool and weird. And I'd sleep with an alarm clock under my pillow. And it would wake me up at those times. And I would crawl downstairs in the night.
Without your parents knowing.
Yes. So I'd be very quiet. So there was that kind of weird physical, visceral experience of not, you know, it was like I was pulling the Lufthansa heist or something. And I got down there and sat in front of the TV and I'd turn on the movie and I'd watch these incredible films. And then if I heard one little creak, I'd turn it off.
And run away.
No, I wouldn't run away. I'd sit there in the dark and I was like terrified. And then when the coast was clear, I turned it back on and some like crazy fucking thing was on screen. And it made the whole experience so immersive and interactive. And then the next morning would come, you'd be a bit sleep deprived, and you started to question whether or not you even watched that movie.
It's funny, I have one of those because my dad, as an Academy member, used to get the screeners, and then he would watch them like after my mom had gone to bed and after we kids had gone to bed. And I remember going out there once, I couldn't sleep, and he was watching Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah.
And I have one of those weird moments where it's like, is it a dream that I'm kind of watching this?
Right.
I've never seen the movie since. I don't think I need to see the
great
movie since.
No, it's a great
because
movie.
I have like that childhood like dreamlike state where I wandered into it.
But what'll happen is that you'll watch it and it'll have this uncanny reaction to it where you will be transported back to being that child again. That's the power of those kinds of that's why I love so-called bad movies, because you know, it's again late at night, there was a Buffalo station that we'd get with our rabbit ears in Toronto called WGRZ. It was an NBC affiliate, and they had something called The Cat's Pajamas, and they'd run horror movies after, you know, 11:30 news. It wasn't paid programming, it wasn't snow. It was movies and Twilight Zone. You know, I got Twilight Zone tattoos and all that. Twilight Zone reruns, Death Valley days, and weird horror movies like Death Curse of Tartu, Blackula, David Cronenberg's that came from within.
Yeah.
And so you were seeing shit that you couldn't see anywhere And even in the dawn of VHS in Toronto, I couldn't find any of this stuff.
How old were you, you think?
Oh, I got like 11. Oh,
yeah, okay, then you're going to have an even harder time.
Well, totally. But, I mean, we didn't have Blockbuster Video or anything like that. We had mom and pop stores. So Dawn of the Dead was one of the big ones for me because I would always see it in the video store. You know, eventually when we did get a VCR when I was 11, my dad and I every Friday night would rent movies. And I saw Dawn of the Dead for the first time. And I remembered when I was little, I had this cousin who I sadly just recently found out, I hadn't seen him in 30 years, found out he died.
Oh, wow.
Jamie lived in Windsor, just on the border of Detroit. And he kind of tuned me into Kiss, you know, my favorite rock band. He kind of got me schooled in Kiss and Alice Cooper. And he was like a cool guy, right? He was just, he knew shit, right? He was like an oracle. But he loved horror movies. And he would tell me about this movie, Dawn of the Dead, that we couldn't see in Canada, was not allowed to be screened here.
Wow, really?
Well, it was unrated, right? So we had provincial rating systems that was draconian. And, so it was screened at the Toronto International Film Festival in 1979. Romero came up for that, and he brought a 16mm print, which I now own, actually.
You own that exact
I own
print.
His print that he left here with Dario Argento in 79. It was donated
the
to the Brock
that
University.
Print has.
I know. It's a little pink, but who gives a shit?
Oh, I
and
like
And it's
it
the
pink.
Full cans cut. It's the full cut.
Wow.
Yeah. So, anyways, I digress. So I remember going to the video store, and I saw the Thorny in my... Yeah, before it was HBO, it was Thorny MI, right? And it had that cover of Dawn of the Dead with that green lettering, which like army stencil, and it had Roger's face, the triptych of his face rising, boom, 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 right? And I was just like, oh my God, it's Dawn of the Dead. That's the one that Jamie was telling me he used to drive over to Detroit every weekend with his friends to watch Dawn of the fucking Dead. And he told me the gore and the guts and the, I'm like, I gotta see this. But I was afraid to rent it. I was afraid. So finally, on my 12th.
What were you afraid of?
I was just afraid it was going to be too scary.
Yeah.
And I was into scary, but this thing had like this legacy that
your cousin had told
you
about.
Oh, he had built
it
up. He was like John Houseman at the beginning of John Carpenter's The Fog, sitting around there telling the ghost stories. He would really hype it up for me. So I had a sleepover with my buddy when I was 11, turning 12. And we rented Dawn. Finally, we sat in, you know, whatever. And it changed my fucking life.
Wow.
To this day, that's a perfect movie. Dawn of the Dead is note for note perfect. It's a great, horror movie I've ever seen. It's the best existential character drama I've ever seen. It's the best war movie I've ever seen. It's the best action film. It's the best kind of bizarro American new wave movie I've ever seen. It's also the best social satire. I mean, it fires on every known cylinder. The soundtrack is punishing, Goblin soundtrack, Romero's amazing drop cue stuff from the DeWolf library, like the gonk and all those weird little cues. I mean, everything about it is a kind of, it hits just every sweet spot to me.
It's funny because that's, so I have like this very small film club that started during lockdown.
Right.
So a bunch of people that I knew could get online and watch movies together.
Right.
And Night of the Living Dead was our very first movie we screened because at the time I was doing public domain movies. So just like whatever was available on YouTube. But now every year for like our anniversary, we watch one of the Dead movies.
Okay.
So then we had Night of the Living Dead, then we did Dawn of the Dead, and then we did Day of the Dead.
Yeah.
Now we're going to go back and do the Dan O'Bannon one because we're
you have to do Return of the Living Dead, but that's the party. You know, the Romero stuff is the thinking man's pinky up kind of horror movie.
Exactly.
Still delivers the gore and everything you need, but it's got more on its mind. Whereas Return of the Living Dead is like a greased bullet and a gun.
Yeah.
Well, and it's just the screaming punk rock soundtrack. There's weird sex. The zombies talk. The brains. They scream. I mean, it's a wild movie. But then it's kind of funny. It is definitely funny. But then it turns. Tell me when you watch it if you can find the moment when it turns from this kind of weird, goofy black comedy to a balls out horror movie and this nihilistic nightmare. Something happens.
Does it
to
do it. Tonally or is it like through
everything
the visuals?
I think it's one of those cinematic happy accidents that everything just starts to. The story, the characters, you know, some great actors there. Clue Gulager's in it.
Yeah.
Linnea Quigley, but it just starts to wind down into this fucking nightmare and it becomes a really genuinely scary movie.
There's like one other movie that does that perfectly tonally for me, which is Something Wild.
Oh my God, Jonathan Demme's.
Yeah, the Jonathan Demme's.
Yeah, that's a.
But
I don't even know what's going on in that movie.
Well,
I've seen it a million times.
Like halfway through the movie, like there's that lighting change at the prom.
Yeah.
And that's exactly like it. Halfway through, it goes dark, and it goes dark visually, it goes dark tonally, and I think that's like one of the greatest tricks in cinema history I've ever seen.
Yeah,
in my life.
You're right. It is at the prom when it starts to just everything just starts to
like
ratchet.
Literally the light goes
and
off.
Ratchet.
And
yeah.
It's so. Oh my
and then
God.
It ends in absolute carnage.
That
I mean,
movie
that is
so good.
When I was a little boy, I didn't like that movie so much because it was a. I didn't was confused by that tone. But
I think I watched that the day that Jonathan Demme died. I think it was just like on TV.
Yeah, I never met Jonathan Demme. That's a real bummer.
Yeah, I think I was like 15.
On TV, so censored.
and in France.
So that's a hell of a way to watch, because that is a very kind of European film.
On a TV like this, I'm like making like a very small box right now, like that
was
big.
Was it censored?
I don't know.
Well, you wouldn't know. There's so much sex.
I wouldn't know. I mean, I've seen it since.
Okay.
But not in a while.
I was just before you got in here, Goodfellas was on AMC, and it was hilarious because it was the censored TV version. And it was like, just like, what are they doing? You know, there's like all the violence, they slow down sequences. They used to do that all the time when they would make TV.
Well, it's so funny. The producer of Buster and Billy.
Yeah.
His son, I met with him to talk about Buster and Billy with him.
Right.
And his son told me that he was the voice actor for Pacino, I think in Scarface.
Oh, for the
for the TV version to like get out all the
that's
cuss
the
words.
Best. No, that and Scarface has the best.
I think it was for Scarface. I know it was for one of the Pacino films, but I think it was Scarface.
Scarface has the best alternate TV dialogue dub of all time.
I think it's him. Yeah.
There's that sequence where he's sitting there on the beach with Manolo. What's his name? I forget that actor's name. And he's like, "This town's like a great big pussy waiting to be fucked." And your friend, they dub it out with, this sounds like a great big chicken waiting to be plucked. It's the best. I mean, if you really love, if you collect 16mm too, you'll end up getting a lot of TV prints because that's where they most of them are. And you'll get some of the best alternate dubs.
And that's the funny thing is I really love these alternate dubs because sometimes they make a movie better. It's like mishearing a song lyric.
Well, and the powers that be, as usual, as you know, you and I know, these draconian sensorial powers.
Especially
that be,
in Canada.
Oh, well, I mean, we'll get to that, but they were so stupid because when you were little watching these movies, I remember The Exorcist was another one when I was really little and seeing it on CBS. And, you know, your mother sucks cocks in hell. Well, I don't know, forget what she's like, your mother scrubs socks in hell or something stupid like that. And that all that does is tune you into like, hold on. And then you're more aware of something they're trying to not to show you. It's like the old Bugs Bunny cartoons. Don't go looking behind this door. Yeah. He's not behind this door. And all you want to do is look
behind
that
the door.
Door.
You know, I think The Exorcist is another perfect movie.
Yeah,
I would totally argue. Yeah. And that's a trilogy that I would...
trilogy.
I love. Well, because Exorcist 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, 2.
Two is so good.
It is. 2 is actually, in a weird way, is the one I keep going back. Well, I love the score.
Well,
that's
it's
the big one.
It's so funny to me because I love The Exorcist. I will tell people how much I love it, but it's my least favorite out of all three of them.
Well, it's the most quote-unquote normal. It's also the one that's been ripped off so much.
Oh, but it's so good.
But nobody defends The Exorcist 2.
I love The Exorcist 2. I think it's awesome. And then The Exorcist 3, I think it's like Blatty is just doing exactly what he would have done. And Brad Dourif's in it.
Well, what do you think? I remember I used to be, in my early days, I was a publicist at Warner Brothers Films in Canada. And I remember we opened up The Exorcist the beginning. Have you seen it?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, so it was part 4. And it was Paul Schrader. He directed it.
Oh, interesting.
And Warner got it back, and they got this weird thinking man's movie that, fuck no, we want chicks spewing crap. So they burned it down, and they hired Rennie Harlan to do, with the same cast, or most of the same, Stellan Skarsgård, and to reshoot it completely from ground up on the same sets, different movie, different script. So there's two versions of The Exorcist, the beginning.
One's called
The Exorcist, the beginning. One's Schrader is The Exorcist Dominion that we released simultaneously. So there's two impressions of the same movie done by two different... obviously,
directors,
incredibly different visions, Rennie Harlan, Paul Schrader.
I wonder why I call it like a trilogy, because obviously the fourth movie does exist. But
well, the
I
fourth
think
is still the fourth.
But is it Exorcist 4 or is it like Exorcist?
It's Exorcist Dominion, Exorcist, the beginning.
Well, because like, for example, Alien, I consider Alien a trilogy. I know that a fourth Alien, I think a fifth one exists, but I consider it a trilogy.
I would like to leave Alien. I hate Alien 3. Alien 4 is stupid. But the Xenomorphs, you know what? I could watch the Xenomorph do dishes and I'd be happy. I might bar is low. I love that. It's my second favorite monster outside of Karloff's Frankenstein.
Oh, really? Karloff's Frankenstein's your favorite?
Oh, yeah. But the Xenomorph is
number
everything.
Two.
Oh, it's the Giger. It's the, you know, the weird sex look to it and the shine and the ferocity. I mean, everything about that creature is right out of the Freudian id. But anyways, back to Dawn of the Dead. So when I was little, I finally rented this thing and I never experienced the movie like it, and it bored me, it excited me, it disturbed me. And up to this point, even though I was aware that people die, you know, when you're little, you don't really think of your own mortality unless you've been really confronted by something immediate, and I wasn't. So this was the movie that destroyed me. For an entire year, I had night terrors. I'd wake up in other rooms crying.
Wow.
Because it was, and I remember sitting at my cottage that summer, looking out, and my grandmother was doing the dishes and talking to me, and I was looking out at the lake, and I was like thinking, oh my God, one day everybody in this beach area will be dead. Everybody I know will be dead. My mother and father, my grandmother will be dead. And who will be in this cottage? And I just had this crazy...
Who will be here?
Yeah, and so it was all because of Dawn of the Dead and the whole idea of this kind of apocalyptic mass death. Because, you know, part of the power of Dawn of the Dead is you can run from death. You can board yourself up in this utopian civilization where you have everything at your fingertips and pretend that you're not going to die. Yeah. And then Romero cuts to the hordes of zombies clawing at the gates. Death will always find you. So it really disturbed me. Plus, I didn't understand biology, right? So at the end, when they rip apart those bikers and the big, they pull out his guts and they pull out all the intestines, I didn't know what those things were. Yeah. I did not know we had ropes inside of us. It made us work.
Oh, wow.
So I would walk around in a state of physical terror because I felt like...
Because someone just pulled them
out
of you.
Yeah, I felt like this bag of blood that could be punctured at any moment.
And we kind of are.
We are. We're so... But that was the movie. That was the moment, the right time when you're at preteen.
Yeah.
When reality starts to creep in.
When you see
in.
A horror movie. I mean, I have my Prince of Darkness.
Oh, my God. That was amazing.
My daddy and I, we used to play this game with my family of like, which movie are we going to watch tonight? And everyone takes one movie out of the pile. And it was between Uncle Buck and Prince of Darkness. And little brother, I love you ever, but my little brother knew that I wanted to watch Uncle Buck and took it out. And so we watched Prince of Darkness. Man,
How old were you?
I don't know. I'm going to guess like anywhere from like 10 to 12.
Oh, 10
and
to
he's 12. Like 8.
Yeah.
So thanks, Ev.
Yeah.
But yeah, that movie scared me so bad. I had night terrors. Even now when I hear ringing in my ears, I'm like, oh my God, I'm trying to contact myself.
Yeah. Speaking of Alice Cooper, he's in that too, right? Yeah.
I think he is. Yeah,
he's one of the homeless guys. Prince of Darkness, I saw a little bit later. I don't think it ever scared me,
The trailer came on at the Bev and I like couldn't watch the trailer. I started I've never seen the movie since. I'm too scared to watch it. I'm too scared.
Oh, this is awesome. You gotta do it.
Came on and my dad was with me. I think I was like clutching onto him and like hiding my eyes. I started feeling nauseous.
Yeah. You might not be as scared of it anymore. I mean, there's a lot of comedy in that too with the... What's his face from Big Trouble in Little China?
Well, when you watched, I'm assuming that you've seen Dawn of the Dead again.
Again?
Like a billion times.
I watched
times.
Dawn of the Dead like once a week. I'm not kidding.
But like when you saw
there's,
it the
you
second
know, because
time...
there's various cuts of it, right? You know.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, there's various cuts. Yeah. When you were a kid, you saw it the one time, and then did it take you like a whole year to watch it again?
Well, what I would do is I got another VCR secondhand, and I'd start dubbing movies, and I became like this pornographer. I would start to like dub movies, and I was the only guy, I had a briefcase full of, which is weird why I ended up taking over Fangoria. It was hard to find Fangoria in Toronto, and I'd find it. You'd find it up in the porn racks and stuff, and I'd find it. And I'd in the used bookstores, and I'd have a briefcase full of this stuff, and I'd be like opening it up on the school bus, going, "Hey, check it out, ladies! Look at this!" Hey, and I'd start dubbing movies, and Lucio Fulci's *The Gates of Hell* and *Pieces*, and one of them was *Dawn of the Dead*, and I would spread that like a virus to people, and I really turned people on to these movies. I created this whole little cabal, this little cult in Toronto of all these people that were, I was their smut dealer. It was amazing. But so, yeah, I watched Dawn of the Dead several times, but for a long time I was afraid of it. I was also afraid of Return of the Living Dead. I remember I told you I would circle the TV guide stuff? I remember watching Return of the Living Dead and being also freaked out by that. I saw that a little bit, actually almost the same time. I think it was like a year later. And I remember going to bed and seeing in the TV guide that Return of the Living Dead was on at 2 a.m. I couldn't sleep just knowing that fucker was on the TV.
Really?
I wasn't watching it. I don't know who was watching it, but to know at that point in history and time that movie would be playing on that box downstairs, and if I just went down and turned it on, it would hit me.
You'd see it. Wow.
So that whole concept of this happening, you know, we don't have that anymore because everything's at our command.
That's the weirdest thing. It's like everything's at our command, and do TV guides even exist anymore?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Well, I don't know if they do or not.
I don't even know if I have cable. I mean,
I definitely don't.
Full disclosure, at my apartment, I don't even have a TV besides my little CRT. I have like a little tiny, smaller than my laptop, and that's what I use to watch stuff.
But there was a pleasure to that because you, appointment television or whatever they call it, there was definitely, you had to be there to see this thing, and if you missed it, you were fucking done. I mean, that was it.
And
you never
got to see it again.
You had one shot. But man, so Dawn of the Dead was the one. And
you watch it every week now, basically?
Well, now it's like I'm obsessed. I mean, here's the thing about Dawn of the Dead is George... And you say there's only three. I mean, those were produced by Richard Rubenstein. They had a certain kind of flavor to them, a certain level of budget. Romero was at a certain point in his life. But later on, when he got a little bit of money, he made Land of the Dead, right?
Yeah.
And he filmed that in Toronto. So he came up here. And he left his wife, his longtime wife, Christine, for a woman named Suzanne, who was the bartender at the hotel where he was shooting.
Oh, wow.
And so he said, fuck it, I'm moving up here. So when he moved up to Toronto.
Jeez.
Yeah. So suddenly Romero and I became really good friends. He lived really close to me. And I would go on and see, shot Diary of the Dead up there, Survival of the Dead, Bruiser.
Do you think those movies that he shot up there, though, are like kind of like a different...
Yeah, I'm not going to... People slam them, but they don't... I'm not... You know, because I knew George and I would go for sushi like once a month. I'd go over, we'd just drink scotch and watch Turner Classic Movies, and we'd just talk about movies. You know, not just horror movies, but then when he got enough in the cups, he'd just tell stories about the make. And he was always really despondent that people were rejecting these newer pictures he was making. He's like, Dawn of the Dead, now everybody wants me to make fucking Dawn of the Dead. You know, he think about George, else, yeah. He's the same as John Carpenter. They loved movies. They were always trying to make other kinds of movies. They were slave to their expectations.
Yeah.
And they could only get their budgets based on, you got to put zombies in it, George. So if you look at all the Dead movies, they're war movies, they're westerns. They're weird, bumbling slapstick comedies. They're all kinds of things that he was trying to do, but he had to insert the ghouls in there somewhere.
Yeah, that's actually, I think, why I love Prince of Darkness so much for Carpenter, is because that and I think They Live were the two movies that he made, and they had pre-sold those. So he already knew that he had was in the green, so he could kind of just do whatever he wanted.
Right, yeah.
So he was not a slave necessarily to his previous endeavors. But I wonder, it's like, these, because I think of Night, Dawn, and Day is kind of a perfect trilogy, and yeah. I would say it's a trilogy, but you're right, there are all these other movies, and it's almost like a different chapter.
It were
like
different chapters of his life. Yeah, different Toronto chapter. Also, they're a little more, if you watch them, they're a little bit more melancholy.
Mm-hmm.
I think Land of the Dead is a bit of a failure because there's studio money involved. There are too many chefs in the kitchen. It wasn't long enough to develop the world that he was developing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was too short. I mean, it's neither, it
here nor there.
Nah,
yeah,
it doesn't quite work.
But
there's great
always,
stuff in it, but it's also too expensive.
But also, it doesn't always work. Not every piece of art has to work.
No.
You can try and you can miss.
No, but with George, I mean, if you go back to Night, he was, necessity being the mother of invention. He was almost like a DJ. Music in Night of the Living Dead's all found music. It's all drop needle stuff.
Yeah.
And it gives it this kind of the music wasn't made for this movie, but he's found ways to edit with this existing music. And there's such a weird symbiosis there that doesn't quite work, but it works. This power. And he does it with Dawn as well. And to a lesser, he didn't really do it with Day, but he had a great score by John Harrison, really cool score for that, which elevated it. But by the time he gets to Land of the Dead, he's working on a studio level with big composers. And that personality, that independent spirit, George's hero was Orson Welles. And, so there was that kind of love of cinema and getting rolling up your sleeves and getting your hands dirty was kind of gone. So I appreciate the next two he made, which were lower budget, Diary of the Dead and Survival, because they were lower budget and he had full control. No one was bugging him. So no, love them or hate them, they are uniquely George at this period in his life.
How old were your children when you showed them?
Well, I mean, George is a friend, so they would go sleep at his house.
They grew up around it.
But they didn't give a shit. I mean,
it's
was afraid. I would always say to them, I'm not showing you Dawn of the Dead until you're 15, because I was too young to see it. Really fucked me up. Totally forgetting the world they live in now with video games and everything else. And what do you see on The Walking Dead?
Oh my God.
Would have been X-rated when I was a kid.
The Walking Dead, I had to stop watching it.
Too depressing.
Point. I started getting really, really bad nightmares.
I just got depressed.
It wasn't fun. I like to watch TV to have fun. And it's funny though, because there are certain things that my dad showed me when I was a kid that I think that nowadays parents would be like, you should not show your children. Like, for example, Fantastic Planet, The Planet Sauvage. I watched that as a kid. It's one of my very first movie memories. Or Baron Munchausen. My dad was showing me some weird stuff like that. And I think nowadays people would be like, oh, that's not correct to show a child because of what it's rated. But I'm fine.
Yeah.
And now we have all these, you are right, kids now have all these really
weird... And they have YouTube. We don't know what they're doing.
Oh my God.
God, I mean, God knows what's out there. It's the Wild West,
okay,
right?
Okay, and also child YouTube and child TikTok. That's the scariest place.
Yeah.
Whenever I'm at the airport and I see a family and they just handed a kid an iPad or a phone, right. I always just look at what the kid is watching and I'm like, that's the child safe version of YouTube or TikTok. That is not child safe. I would not watch that.
It's when the production code hit in the early 30s, right? It's suddenly you couldn't do this, you couldn't do that, but they still wanted to, tell their tales of sex and violence and weird shit. So they would kind of circumnavigate their limitations, and they would sneak in the dirty stuff as the subtext. Then it was still all there. You just had to look a little harder. So I think a lot of the stuff that's supposed to be kid friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. It's mutated and weird. And you know, to me, it's like, I don't know. You can show your kids almost anything within reason, as long as you're prepared to sit with them and guide them
and explain it to them.
Because kids aren't stupid. We weren't stupid when we were kids. Something happens to grown-ups when they hit a certain level. They start to think kids are like this alien, dumb species. They're not. They're questing. They're evolving humans, and it's up to you to guide them in their evolution. Are we almost out of time? I think we're.
Oh, we're not,
because I have a great.
Tell me.
Back to that trilogy, and also the Draconian Ontario Censor Board. So when I was coming of age and started collecting VHS, and this is about age 12, 13, I would go to mom and pop video stores, and you had the big box stuff, and they wanted to get rid of that shit because it was taking up all the space. So I could buy, like, you know, Umberto Lenzi's Nightmare City. It was called City of the Walking Dead then. And Tombs of the Blind Dead and crazy ass European shit for really cheap because they just want to dump it in those giant sexy boxes and everything else. So I was like, and so I would do that. I'd make deals with these guys. I was a little hustler. It was great. And always had my eye on, like, okay, if this movie's bumping around a long time, I'd always tell the guy, like, look, you know, once this thing's rented out, you don't have any use for it. I'll pay you $20 or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was a lot for me back then, $20. I had to mow a lot of lawns to get that. But Day of the Dead, they had Day of the Dead there, and I rented it first. Now, when Day of the Dead came here in 1986 on VHS, the Ontario cut is literally cut to shit.
Oh,
they
really?
Not even a graceful edit. They took this, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 was another one.
They just, like,
20 minutes gone. So, like,
wow,
there
no.
was not a drop of blood in it. Even the profanity, everything
what?
Is cut to, oh my God.
How?
It is, they would just go in there, cut. It, with whatever, like a scissors. I mean, it was, and then stitch it back together. So the music would jump.
No.
Oh, man, it's gone. None of that stuff I'd heard about in Fangoria was there. This great unrated
You're
movie.
You're like, what is this?
I still liked it because I love Bub. You know, I love that Howard Sherman as Bub. So there was cool stuff in it, but I was like, this movie's bone ass dry, man. What's going on?
You knew it was the censored version or
Well, no? yeah, because what happened is on the back of the box, they would have a sticker that they would just clumsily stick over the running time.
Oh.
And same thing with Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. I remember seeing a bootleg of that off cable, off HBO or something, and it was disgustingly violent. And then I bought the Ontario version of it, a sticker on the back. There's nothing there, man. It was empty. It was bone-ass drug. So here's the thing. So we didn't have Blockbuster Video. We didn't have all this stuff. And then when I was years later, I bought this version of Day of the Dead. Still loved it, but I knew what I had. Always on the lookout for the unrated. Couldn't find it anywhere. You know, anyways, so years later, I think it was 17 or 18, and a Blockbuster Video starts to come creep into Canada now. And one opens up close to where we live in this little suburb outside of Toronto. And I start looking in the horror section. To me, it was like, you know, because I was used to these mom and
had the
weird
had
shit.
The weird stuff,
You know, the Paragon videos, all that cool stuff that we love now. Was all the downmarket ghetto stuff, and that's what I liked. Sometimes I'd rent the same movie four times because they'd put a different title on it. I didn't care. It was all part of the come on, the P.T. Barnum circus.
Yeah.
So I was looking through the horror section, and there's Day of the Dead. I'm like, oh, Day of the Dead. I pick it up, turn it over. It's the real running time.
Wow, this is the first time a Blockbuster has ever come in clutch.
Yeah, so, I mean, but it was released unrated in the States, so I don't think there was a big issue about that ever, theatrically or on video. And so what this Blockbuster must have done is just exported all their
American
stock
to Canada.
Thinking, yeah, because, you know, early days of home video, everyone's asleep at the wheel, right? So I'm like, oh my God, could this be? Could this be? And I rented it, took it home with my buddy, my girlfriend at the time. We got together and I gave them a little pre-lecture. Oh, this movie, blah, 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 blah. Even back then, I was obnoxiously know-it-all when it came to movies. And then we popped it up. And immediately when Dr. Tongue shows up on screen, in the Ontario version, they blacked him out. So you couldn't, he's just sitting there and says, Day of the Dead. You can't see anything on his face. All of a sudden, there's his tongue and it's hanging out of his mouth and it's falling off. I'm like, oh my God.
You knew what you
were The angels
for.
Were singing. It was like, wow. Oh my God, this is it. This is it. So we're watching it. And then if you've seen Day of the Dead, you know it's an, you know, love it or hate it, it's an embarrassment of violence.
I love it.
I mean, even the guts falling out, the heads drilling. I mean, it's just, and then that climax.
Yeah.
Where they rip the head off and his vocal cords are straight.
That's one of the best moments ever.
Oh, God. Oh, we're done.
We're done.
Okay, quick. So anyways, I was like, it was a religious experience here. I got this finally uncut copy of The Day of the Dead, but it's not mine. What do I do with it? And Blockbuster Video is not keen to making deals. So fuck it. I took my shitty copy of Day of the Dead, switched the labels, put it all in there, and I returned my shit-ass copy of Day of the Dead to Blockbuster, and I kept this. And now, to this day, I wonder how many poor schlubs like me ended up at that Blockbuster, saw that running time, got excited, took it home, and they were like, wah, 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 sad trombone. So that's my Day of the Dead. So it's a good one. And I still have that stolen Day of the Dead.
So if anyone was in that area and experienced that, you know who to blame.
I mean, I knowing that area, I was probably the only man who gave it a rat's ass or knew anything. But you never know. So yes, I don't break the law often, but when I do, it's with very good reason.
It's for art.
Yes.
And that's all the time that we have for today. Chris, is there any final thought that you would like to leave the audience with?
Oh my God, no. Just that this is a great experience. I love you. I love this show. I love everything that you guys are up to and doing. And it's for someone who's loved this stuff since I have a memory. It's just a joy. Pleasure. And there's few things in life that give me absolutely pure, uncomplicated pleasure. So thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. And thanks for being a listener. I really appreciate it. And also thank you to your son listening as well.
Well,
so,
yeah. So, Jack. Yeah. Hey, Jack.
Jack, thanks for listening. That is it for today. Thank you so much to Chris for coming on to the show. You can keep up with the latest news from Chris on his website, chrisalexanderonline.com, or on his Instagram at chris_alexander_films. I'm Gala Avery, and this has been The Gala Show.
The Gala Show is brought to you by Insertomatic. This episode was executive produced by Roger Avery and produced by Gala Avery. Music composed by Andy Milburn. As always, I'm your host, Gala Avery. Copyright 2023, all rights reserved. Despite me sharing the same last name with this charity, I don't have any affiliation with it, besides the fact that the issue is very near and dear to my heart. Did you know that in the United States, 2.7 million children currently have a parent in prison, and it's estimated that 10 million children have experienced parental incarceration at some point in their lives? I was one of these kids, and as an adult, I am really grateful to be able to give back to Project Avery. Their mission is to build leadership from within by supporting community through programs such as mentoring and outdoor education, and also to remove the stigma surrounding having a parent that's incarcerated. You don't have to feel alone. If you know a kid who could use these resources or would like to donate money or time to the charity, please go to Project Avery, that's AVARY.org, to check out what this amazing charity is all about. Again, that's projectavery.org. Thank you guys, from the bottom of my heart.